Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
I'm doing good today here. The sun's coming out, and I'm trying to be positive.
You're trying to be positive. Does that mean it's a difficult choice?
Well, you know, we're going through difficult times, but I'm trying to learn from what you and Terry talked about in your last show. Find sacred in the ordinary moments here and reach out to people. Don't just sit back alone and think the world's coming to an end here.
Yeah, that podcast was released today, and I hope that some of our listeners have already had a chance to catch on to it. But one thing you said that I think is really important, and one of the things that we talked about, how do you deal with or manage your time during this, you know,
in self-isolation, stay at home,
inconvenience, illness.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we should do, that we talked about doing, is calling friends. And I have called on you know, I'm not calling my normal friends. Mm-hmm. I'm calling people I haven't talked to for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, right.
It's really interesting talking to them because I don't know what's going on in their life. And so here's what I was thinking, Paul. Tell me what you think about this. That I don't know if I'll do a series of it, or it's a 1 week show, or it'd be once a month, or ever how long this quarantine lasts. But I'm calling it Conversations in Quarantine.
I like it. I like it, because here's what I
thought. It's a crazy idea.
Paul. It's a little it's a off the wall, idea. But yeah.
Yeah. What if we were to call one of my friends, and I'm thinking of my friend, the eternal creative gypsy, Taryn Voguette, who lives
okay.
everywhere around the world, 2 or 3 times a year, and just moving around doing different things. And I haven't spoken with Taryn for, 6 to 8 months. And, you know, we used to talk like monthly. And so I'm curious what it would be like. So I'm thinking, what if we call Taryn and just have a conversation, have a checkup conversation.
Just like Taryn, that, right on the air for everybody to hear here, unvarnished, real, hey, how you doing? I'd love to do it, because I hear this more and more now. Since you brought this idea up, this idea of calling people, I have asked more and more people, are you doing that? And more people are telling me, I'm hearing from people I haven't heard from in years. I'm hearing from people, I'm feeling a need to reach out to people. I'm alone. I'm isolated. I want to connect. What is anybody alive out there? What's happening in the world? And I can't take it alone. And I can't go out and build an actual community. Can't go to church. Can't go to a bar. Can't go to a sports game. So what do? I sit and dial for people because I'm lonely and I need a connection.
Well, we're going to give it a shot. And like today's podcast, it is, you will edit this a little bit, but this is not a prepared. I have not prepared a list of questions for Taryn. It will truly be a conversation, and that she and I can have long conversations.
You always mention that. You say, and I've always found that interesting, because most people I know don't have long conversations anymore. Quick conversations on the phone. Hi, how are you? Coming over. Good. See you soon. Most people do not want to sit like I remember being a kid, where people would talk on the phone for hours.
Oh, I know. When you were a kid, you did talk on the phone for hours. And we had party lines.
You did? Did you ever party? I never had one of those.
Yes.
I know of them.
Yes,
yeah.
We had a major one. Then we got the exclusive 4-person party line, and we finally got our own line. But I don't really recall how we managed the party line. It was the number of rings. Different people would pick up
yes.
on different numbers of rings.
Right. I just remember having a phone. We only had one phone in the house, like most people. And I would tie it up, certainly when I was a teenager, but even earlier, would just talk for hours to my buddies or my friends on the phone. Eventually, when you had girlfriends, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Talk for hours to your girlfriend. And my parents would say, "Get off the line."
Let's talk to a girlfriend here. Let's talk to I love to call her as my gypsy friend, and she's quite successful. You know, just a bit for our listeners. Mm-hmm. Taryn is not your everyday gypsy. She lived for a year, sort of bootstrapping it in Europe, traveling Europe, which is a fabulous story. I met her at SpaceX, where she was consulting and coaching executives at SpaceX. And the last job she had that she doesn't have now, because she just doesn't last a job long. She gets bored. And she was in an executive position at the Gates Foundation. And she has since moved out of San Francisco, and I think she's living down here in Southern California now, but I'm not sure. So we will find out all about Taryn, who is extremely talented and extremely interesting.
All right.
So
we
give her a shot. Dial her up.
I dialed her up, and she's on the phone. Taryn, are you with us?
Hi, I am. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, you. Did you hear my introduction of you?
I heard half of it, and you said such nice things about me. Thank you.
She did come in, though, just as you were saying, she can't hold a job, though. So that's the part I brought her in on.
Yeah. Fired, yep. I was like, well, that's true.
Yeah, I just said you're my loving gypsy friend, that you truly are a gypsy.
You know, my mom says that about me, too.
Does she?
Yep.
Well, don't you say it? What are you?
I like to think of it as flexible.
Flexible. That's a good adjective. Just flexible. So I'm going to be flexible and duck out of this, but before we do, I don't know if Taryn knows today's topic, but you and Terry, your good friend, were talking the other day about how do we handle this isolation we're forced into. For years we said, hey, we all want a little more time. Now we got it in spades. And most of us are scared and frightened to be alone at home, particularly during difficult times. Can't go to church, can't go to the bar, can't go to the sports game, can't even go over and hang out with your neighbors. So how do we handle it? You guys said old-fashioned, write letters or get on the phone and call somebody you haven't heard in a while. And that led to this idea. What would that look like? Because I don't know what a long phone conversation looks like. I haven't called a friend and talked for an hour in years. So that's today's experiment. You guys are going to show us, you're going to model that good behavior.
Well, let's see. And Paul, I can't believe you can't talk for an hour, because you can talk for an hour every time I'm with you.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But nobody will let me. Maybe that's it. Everybody wants to hang up. Yeah, get off the phone. I've heard enough here.
Okay. Taryn. So it has been six. We chatted ever so briefly, but I didn't want to chat in depth, and we agreed it's been at least 6 to 8 months. Do you know, you were on the show, you were one of the first ones on the show, you were number 26 on the show, and we're doing 146 right now.
No kidding, you've done that many shows. Gosh, time flies. That's
time
amazing.
Flies, yeah. It was, I think it may have been, I don't have my spreadsheet open, but I think it might have even been late 2018 that we talked.
It could not have been that long. I mean, I will admit, I've been in a bit of a cave. I've been working very hard on some projects, but I'm emerging, so your timing is perfect.
Okay, but before the cave, so you haven't been in a cave. I know you. You haven't been in a cave for 8 months. You must have been doing something really interesting before then.
Well, I can't remember the last time we spoke, but I'll get you caught up. It was a little over a year ago, I'd say January last year, that a colleague of
January
mine called
of 19?
Me up and said, yeah, 19, yep, so a little over a year ago, said, hey, would you be interested in doing some consulting projects at Kiva? And Kiva, a lot of people know Kiva. It's a nonprofit that is best known for doing microloans in over 85 countries around the world.
Right.
And if you don't know what a microloan is, you know, where you and I might take out a $20,000 loan to start a business or buy a car, in a lot of developing countries, $50 will buy you something to get a business going, or $100 or $500. And so the idea is that by lending small amounts of money, you can really help entrepreneurs get their business going, or help them pay for supplies or medical or college or whatever. And so the loan amounts are typically very small. They're called microloans. And the way the platform works is that people like you and me, just Joe and Jane Public, goes and makes loans in $25 increments to people around the world, and you get paid back. They're just at 0% interest that you lend at. So that's how Kiva's been known. It was one of Oprah's favorite things. It's a really well-known nonprofit. And so anyway, a colleague of mine went there, asked me to come do some consulting, which I thought I'd stay for 3 months, and they kept asking me to do more and more interesting projects. And here I am, a little over a year later, just about to wrap up the last of the projects they asked me to do. So it's been, but it's been intense, man. You know, small companies are interesting. I mean, Kiva is about 120 employees. And the smaller the company, the harder you have to work because there's not big staff to do things. You end up doing it all. So I've been just in a cave busy.
Oh, I know. I'm in a staff in the United States that has six people and one in Uganda that has six people. And so you are caught doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the work. I mean, everybody's really fantastic. It's just you're doing much more work than you would normally do. But one thing that's really interesting that the listeners may find interesting, isn't it that with microloans, they're the lowest default of any loan out there, that they get paid back at a 98% rate or something like that? Am I right on that, or?
You are right. And the repayment rate sort of varies amongst the demographic, but on average, it's about a 96.5% repayment rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's an average loan, do you know?
I don't know what the stats are on the average. Again, it depends on the country and the region and the demographic. I think it's around $500 is the average loan.
Oh, no. I mean, what's the average rate of default on loans that are made in the United States? I mean,
in the U.S., someone just told me that number. I want to say it's higher than you. I mean, it's like the default rate is like 20%. It's high.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. We're with
so now, we're now the, you told me you were doing some fun things like skiing too, right?
Oh, I did. I made 2019 my year to get in shape, and so I hired a trainer. I've been to the gym. I've been really good. My sister called me in, I want to say it was September, October, and said, hey, I want to do a big blowout for my 40th birthday. Let's go skiing in Chamonix, France. And for those skiing enthusiasts, Chamonix, France is considered like hard skiing. It's just sort of steep and hard and just really good snow and a good place to ski. And so I was like, all right. So I ended up upping my training regime and getting myself an extra good ski shape. And she and I went skiing for a week in Chamonix in January. It was the most glorious week. It was sunny every day. The snow was flawless. We had such a good time.
That is great. And you've been working out too, huh?
I was all fit. I was doing working out with my trainer. I was going to SoulCycle, and then everything got shut down. What has it been? A month ago now. And so I'm just trying to figure out. I work so hard, and now it's all going away. So I called my trainer, JT, and I love him, and he agreed to meet me at some random neighborhood grass patch because everything here in Santa Monica is closed. And so I'm working out with him now. I just started 2 days ago, and he stands like 15 feet away from me, and he tells me what to do, and I do it. And that's our workout for now.
Does he bring weights or anything, or is it just all isometric?
Kettlebell. Yeah, he's got some, like, small equipment. I've got some small equipment. Between the two of us, we have, enough to... I mean, it's no gym, don't get me wrong, but it's enough.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's incredible that you do that. Mine is eating peanut butter lavash breads.
That sounds fabulous. I swear we're all going to emerge about 20 pounds heavier after this quarantine is over, because I don't know about you, but I'm a total boredom eater. And so I'm at home all day, and it's like every 20 minutes I get up and I have a bite of this or a bite of that. And by the end of the day, I'm sure I've consumed 4,000 calories.
Well, you know what? I had really gained weight, and I just lost between January and now, but it was mostly, I lost it in about a 6 week period, but I lost 23 pounds.
What? That's
yes.
In 6 weeks? What did you do?
I just changed my eating patterns.
Dang, that's impressive.
I didn't eat sweets. I eat two meals a day. I have eggs, lentil, spinach for breakfast. I don't eat lunch, and then I have a salad with no dressing at night. That's it.
Well, that's inspiring. I could take a page out of your chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've had one job this whole time. I mean, I can't believe you've kept a job for a year.
You know, and it's so not like me. I'm not a good full-time employee, and I'm still technically a consultant. It's been one organization, but about 10 different jobs. The latest one's been somewhat of the most, I wouldn't say it's the most interesting. It's the one that I feel like I've gained some interesting perspective on. So I came in, I did a bunch of things. I worked directly with the CEO on a bunch of projects. I ran PR for a while, which was really interesting because I got to go to New York on this big PR tour. And we met with, you know, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and like all these fancy, you know, prestigious, you know, Forbes and Fortune and all these fancy prestigious. And you think in your mind, oh my gosh, it's such a big deal to talk to the media. But the actual sausage making of it is not at all like you imagine. Like you're in some dingy cafe with a reporter who's like underpaid, totally frazzled, like trying to get their story done in 20 minutes. Yeah, that's what big news stories look like.
So just like in the movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got covered in the Financial Times. That was a big deal. So I ran PR at a really interesting moment in time for Kiva.
Let's back up. How in the world did you run PR? Do you have any graphics experience or any public relations experience, or
no,
are you involved in the
nothing.
Software part or just the strategy?
I knew nothing
part?
About PR. And we had hired an agency that was able to get all of those media placements, but I still had to, you know, coordinate and show up and figure out talking points for the CEO and all kinds of stuff. It was very eye-opening. And then we had a big, huge project in Africa, in Sierra Leone, rolling out the first digital identity system where you can actually walk into a bank, fingerprint in, they would know who you are, and you could open up a bank account or a loan, which for us, we don't even think about it. It's just like what we do. But in a lot of countries, especially in Africa, they don't even have birth certificates. Nobody knows who they are. They don't have a social security number, nothing. So it's impossible to vote, get a driver's license, open up a bank account. And so this was a big project to make all that happen with a biometric, a fingerprint scan. And so anyway, we launched that project what month was it now? It was last year. It might have been September, August or September. And there was just a big PR flurry around it. And every major publication picked up the story because it was really quite a cutting edge story. And so that was crazy. That was crazy last fall. I didn't get the media placements. I just managed all of it on the internal side for Kiva.
Oh, so you were not in Sierra Leone?
No, I sent a teammate to go because Sierra Leone is really far away. and so I sent a colleague to go. And you know, it's funny, actually, there wasn't that much media in Sierra Leone. Most of the reporters picked up the story remotely, so it wasn't really necessary to be there. But there was a huge press conference. We had a film crew there the whole bit.
Yeah, I am spoiled. I probably shouldn't even say this on air, but when I go to Africa, I will not fly coach. I only fly business class.
I want
to make it to a bed, and I want somebody coming and serving me.
Well, and that was actually a little bit where my head was at, which is I am not getting on a plane for 22 hours in coach, and that, you know, it's a nonprofit, right? We're flying coach, and I had a staffer that was completely thrilled to go in coach. And I was like, you go.
So what are you learning these days? Besides PR.
Yeah, so that was just a brief stint. There was sort of an interesting twist of events at Kiva, and a key executive left, and they asked me if I wouldn't mind running HR and facilities for a while. And,
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You went in doing what?
I went in doing some just consulting projects, just a variety of things, like four or five different small projects that they needed help with. And then the CEO and I got along really well, and he said, hey, would you come help me run a bunch of other projects? And then the head of PR left, and he's like, oh, my God, would you mind stepping in to do PR? And this is how the year went. It was a whole bunch of, like, people leaving or stuff getting shifted around, and Taryn, could you just do it? So I've had at least three jobs all year. And then they asked me if I would run HR and facilities, and I said, this is
HR
not totally my
jam.
I will do it as long as there's a timeline on it, and I can find you the perfect person that will really, you know, take you where you need to go, because this is neither my passion nor I do not have deep expertise in HR. I mean, I love people and I'm interested in facets of it, but HR is its own thing.
Yeah, but you got comps and bennies and all of that kind of thing.
Oh, it's all the sort of HR operations. It's like, you know, it's from the sausage making of the people side. I mean, I'm much more interested in like the training and the development and the coaching and the, you know, all of the like structuring.
The
like that part's interesting.
The humanity of business.
Yeah, and that's you know, and when you're in a small organization, that's not all that much of a job, to be honest. A lot of it's just the sausage making of people and, you know, sort of the people operations. But yeah, so they asked me to do it. I said yes. One of the reasons that I felt sort of compelled to say yes was that Kiva's lease was up. Kiva is located in downtown San Francisco. Headquarters are in downtown San Francisco. Lease was up, and they needed someone to find a new office and get everybody moved. And I have a sort of a side passion for interior design. And I was like, all right, I can get behind that project if I could design a new office. And I said, sure, you can do whatever you want. So found a new office for Kiva. Randomly, it's two blocks away. Beautiful space.
Oh, you
space.
Found the entire office space for the company?
Yeah, I mean, we had an agent that helped us, but yeah.
Well, of course. But that was your responsibility.
Yeah, to find it And part of the reason we needed to, the lease was up, but we also wanted to move because the space was just not the right space for us. It was too expensive. It just was too big for what we needed. So found actually a much nicer space for way less money, two blocks away. And I got to do kind of a fun project, which is design the space. I hired a designer and designed what I think the way an office should be designed, given the constraints that I had, which was, you know, budget. Obviously, it's a nonprofit. I wasn't working on, you know, Gates Foundation budget. And designed a really cool office. And the funny thing is, it was all set to open last Monday. And, of course, that didn't happen. So I have a brand-new, beautiful office sitting utterly empty at the moment.
Is it? Did you design it in the WeWork sort of model of all the standing and open space, or is it an office space?
Well, you know, every office now is one big, huge, open office. You know, the days of cubicles and, you know, private offices are just gone. Like, they don't exist anymore. So it's a big open space, but I've never been a huge fan of big open spaces because I think they're really hard to work in. So I got to add all of the things that I think make an open space work, which is phone booths and meeting pods and privacy lounges and spaces where you can go actually like think and be quiet, as well as communal spaces, like design the coolest kitchen with, you know, cool sort of Starbucks style seating and all kinds of cool things, and did it on like a total budget, but it looks fantastic. Made it really green. I think offices should have plants and feel green and feel delicious. And so it's got all these natural materials and plants and living walls. Now it's all fake because we couldn't have it living, but it looks like it's real. And it feels like it's real. So it's, yeah, I'm pretty proud of
what
it.
What is the square footage? How big is the place?
It's about 8,100 square feet. Yeah.
And that takes 100. No, there's not 120 people in there.
No. So funny enough, I mean, Kiva's actually got offices all over the place. A big one in Portland, one in New York, a couple in around the world, and a lot of remote staff. But the truth of the matter is there's about 70 people in San Francisco, but I've been doing the math, and on any given day there's about 40 in the office. People are traveling, they're remote, they're in meetings, they're working from home, whatever it is. So I designed an office to fit about 40 people.
Oh, 81 square feet will handle four people or 40 people?
It'll handle more than that, but I only put 40 desks in. Yep.
Oh. Mm-hmm. That sounds like my desired house for a single person.
8,100 square feet?
Yeah, I like big rooms.
You know, I've always said I don't need a big space. I need a perfectly designed space. And so, you know, because you can have a big space that's not well designed and it just doesn't feel cozy.
Right. So you really are, you know, somebody the other day, and I declined the description, but says, you know, you're really a Renaissance man. And I said, no, I'm just curious. And so, and I get bored easily, but you really are a Renaissance woman. You have so many talents. It just seems anytime anybody asks you to do anything, oh yeah, I can do that. And then what do? You go off the computer and look it up and see how to do it.
No, not usually. Usually it's like just obvious. It's so funny. I know the CEO asked me, and I was like, I can do anything except for like physics and science, but anything else I can do. So just let me know what you need. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, and you can, and you're really good at accounting because you're an SAP specialist too.
I do know SAP, and I know all the big ones, SAP, Oracle, yeah. You know, it's funny, when I started my career, I worked for Accenture, a consulting firm, and you sort of get thrown into these projects, and you have to figure it out, and I think that it's just really young. You just walk into a situation you know nothing about, an industry you know nothing about, a client you really know nothing about, and you have about a week to figure it out. And so I just built this muscle of like, oh, that's how you do it. You just ask them questions, you figure it out, and it's like not that difficult. I mean, most things in business are just not that difficult.
You know, I read once, yeah. my wife at one time was a career counselor, and she had found a statement, I think, out of Harvard Business Review or something, that the average job, the average business job in America can be learned in 90 days.
I totally believe that.
Yeah, and we got these kids doing these stupid degrees, and I'm sorry, kids, but kids, you know, 25-year-olds going to business school and college, and I think it's such a waste of time, you know, when they should be doing liberal arts education and learning how to think and learning philosophy and literature and languages. It carries them so much further in life.
Undergraduate degree in business. I went to Georgetown, as you know, and I got an undergraduate degree in business. I was a finance and management double major, and I'll tell you what you learn in that program. You learn how to work with people, because every single class has group projects that require you to collaborate and deliver something together, and you learn how to use tools like Excel and PowerPoint. I mean, you actually do learn useful business skills.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay. So maybe
I felt like I did.
Well, I won't take it back, but I will reconsider it somewhat, because I really do believe that we do miss out in the liberal arts education.
Well, I don't disagree with you there. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, to finish answering your question, I now run HR and facilities, but we're actively hiring my replacement because I said I will see you through the office move, which was supposed to happen last week. It's now empty, but in theory, we could move in. And it's been really fascinating to run a people team in these times, especially the last month. So I feel like I've learned a lot, actually. So I guess I'm not like upset about it. I mean, I don't really like having a full-time job, but I've learned a lot. So that's been good.
So what are you doing? What kind of tools are you using now in this time where everybody is sequestered?
Well, you know, the truth is, I was in utter denial about this whole situation until about Sunday. And then I realized, oh my God, they're serious. So luckily I have some colleagues that have been taking this more seriously than me. I mean, we had to evacuate staff out of, like, I don't know, 10 different foreign countries. And we made it, like, some of our staff made it on the last flight out before borders shut down.
Yeah, borders are shutting down in Africa.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, we had two staff members in Honduras that were literally on the last flight back to the U.S. And so, I mean, there's just been some crazy things. You know, the thing that's been interesting about the situation on the business front is that the situation keeps changing daily, and so it's really hard to know what to do or what to plan. And so, obviously, I don't know, whatever it was, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, we sent everybody home so no one could come into the office, any of our offices around the world. So it was mandatory work from home for all our locations, all our staff. And, you know, now everyone's got their kids at home. And so they're trying to work from home with kids. One of our attorneys has 4 kids and his wife is an ER doctor. So he's an attorney trying to do Kiva business with 4 small kids at home and no wife around to help. And so, I mean, that's...
Well, he's a single dad.
Well, he's not. I mean, he's married, but during the day, he's a single dad trying to manage.
Oh, because she's at the office.
Because she's at the ER, being the, you know, the ER doctor.
Oh, the ER. Oh, I missed that. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, so we've got sort of that on one extreme. We've got younger staff members that have like 3 and 4 roommates and nowhere to actually have a Zoom call or a conference call. I mean, it's been really hectic. No one's really gotten the groove of it yet, trying to figure out, like, how do you work from home with all these distractions? And, you know, my team is people, you know, and when you're a people person and you're at home by yourself all day, like, it's not good for your sanity. So I've got, you know, people that are struggling emotionally. So, I mean, it's just really everyone's having such a different experience working from home. But, I mean, we're another 8-10 weeks in, I think, to a whole work from home scenario, and everyone's just trying to figure out how to do it. What I think has been interesting, though, in this is that a lot of companies have allowed flexible work, and there have been sort of more and more so over the last couple of years. But this feels like it just tipped everybody right over the edge in terms of really making working from home the new way we're going to start doing things. And coming to the office will be the special thing, not the expected thing. So I think it's really going to change the whole landscape of work.
Oh, yeah. We had a show that we did last week, and then we couldn't tape it because I remotely got a new microphone, and I didn't set it up correctly, and it was sort of inaudible, so we have to redo the show. But we talked about the changes that are going to come to place as a result of this sheltering in place, and remote working is one of the first things that came to place, and a whole lot more virtual. Yet we, you know, what I think we're discovering as well is that while we can do more work at home, there still really is a need, like what you said, as a people person, there's a need for connectivity. We just cannot do without face-to-face. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever hug again, but, you know, the human touch, there is something so important about that I can see people who are really in need of that, you know, the extroverted kind of person that really needs people. This could be an extremely difficult time.
Yeah, it is. So I went for a walk, and I went walking around my neighborhood this morning, as I do, because what else am I going to do? And it's like the most uncomfortable feeling when you're walking down a sidewalk and someone's coming towards you, most likely with a dog, and they will leave the sidewalk, go on the street, walk around you, and then get back on the sidewalk. Like, it makes me feel like I'm some social pariah. And it's like not good for my ego, and yet they're doing it for their safety and mine. Like, obviously I understand that, and yet the feeling in the moment is, oh my God, this person like is trying to avoid me. What did I, like, am I that horrible? You know, it's like, it's so not the way we're wired.
Training, I look good.
I know. See my biceps? Yeah, I know. It's so awkward. I am.
You know what we're finding is that we do a daily walk around the neighborhood, and we do that, but I would say 20% of the people or so at a 12-foot distance, we have a conversation. And we've had like 15-minute conversations because people are dying to talk to somebody other than the people they're living with.
Well, you have a friendly neighborhood. That's cool.
No,
really?
Have you
met some new neighbors?
I have a neighborhood. I'm probably 70% Asian in my neighborhood, and they're typically very quiet and very much to themselves. But, you know, come this time, you know, we're finding everybody's quite talkative, and you know, you can have a conversation with just about everybody. And there was a guy walking by us the other day and said, oh, second thought, I recognize you. And we had no idea who this guy was. No idea, but we had a 5 or 10 minute conversation with him. So be ready. That's your next step, is that after you do your 10 foot, then you have a conversation.
Wow. So do you feel like you're going to have some new neighborhood friends, or is it just like a one-time thing?
Are you kidding? Come on. I'm an introvert. You know, Terry had this. He posted on one of his blogs. He posted, you know, coming from COVID, stay at home, avoid people, and avoid contact in large places. And the introvert response: I've been planning for this my entire life.
That's funny.
And that's sort of, you know, I don't mind it because I do really well in solitude. Do I miss people and seeing people? You know, to some degree, yes. Yes, you know, I realize the need. I wrote on that a couple of weeks ago, the need for connection. And that's one thing that's becoming apparent. We are going to become more viral, but at the same time, more virtual. But at the same time, during this period, we are indeed facing the need for connection, for human connection.
Yeah, and getting it through a Zoom or a video conference is just not the same at all.
It's not the same, but you know, I don't mind it. I like, you know, my son and his wife, you know, my son got married. You didn't know that. My son got married in November.
Wait, what? Really? I did not know that. Congratulations.
They've been dating engagement? Since high school for 8 years, so it's like time. And you know what's the coolest thing about it, Taryn? Is that he asked me to be the best man in his wedding.
Oh, that's so cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So we have a conversation with them over Zoom on every Thursday. You know, once a week we have a time set Thursday at 4 o'clock and we Zoom. And it's not the same, but it, you know, I'm not completely dissatisfied with it.
Yeah, he's got to be bummed. I mean, is baseball season happening? What's going on?
We just don't know. They figured out some things to help players. They got a little bit of advance on their salary, so they got some money because they don't get paid till they play. So they got a little bit of money, and then there's this thing called service time that's very important. It has to do with your hitting free agency and hitting arbitrations and all, and they get, even if the season were to be closed, they still continue to get their service time. So they're okay baseball-wise, but they're missing out on big salaries, and and now they're just locked up at home. You know, they stay away from each other.
Wow.
So it's a difficult thing when you're used to being very active.
Yeah. I mean, not only active, I mean, you know, I guess some of these players probably have home gyms, but not everybody. And even my gym, my building
is closed.
Austin
has a home gym.
Yeah.
He has the benches for bench press, and he has all the weights, and he has some kind of bike machine, you know, that new famous bike machine right now, the one that's really popular.
A Peloton?
Yes. He has one of those. So he and his wife get to work out. They're both workout people. So they get to do that. And then try not to do damage to one another.
Now, was this a short engagement? Because it feels like this happened somewhat suddenly, or did I just miss this whole chapter?
You know, it was about a year-long process. Because what they had to do is they had to get married in the off season. If they didn't, he asked her in January in the off season. They got married in November. If they didn't get married this off season, then they would have had to wait a whole another year and a half. And it, you know, he asked her to marry him, and they decided, let's just make this thing happen from January to November. And they had an incredible wedding. So everything was really wonderful.
Where'd they have it?
In Fallbrook. Do you know where that is? It's north of San Diego.
No, I don't.
It's a kind of a peaceful little place, and they had it at a wedding venue, and it was just really quite beautiful, quite nice.
Gorgeous.
Very well done.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So I'm curious about, why do you think it is that you are so gypsy? Is it because you are a Renaissance woman? Taryn, you really are gypsy. I mean, you're living in San Francisco now, right?
No, I'm in Santa Monica. So
Still in Santa Monica. That's where I knew you were.
But I Kiva's in San Francisco, so I work from home sometimes, and I go up there sometimes. So it's I travel up there, usually like a week or two a month. But so I've been doing that since I started at Kiva. Yep. So I've been traveling a lot. I don't know. I guess some part of my soul just likes to be in different places. I'm not really good at rooting into any one place very well, whether it's a physical location or a company or a thing. And I do. I don't know if bored's the right word, but it feels like I've done it, you know? And after I feel like I've done it, I'm ready for the next thing. And I think the done it part is like, I've mastered it enough and now just staying on. Like, I suck at maintenance. Like, you want me on a project that needs to be built. You don't want me on maintenance. Like, I suck at maintenance. So I don't know. I'm just someone that likes to build new things. And that's just how I'm wired. I don't know why I'm such a gypsy. I guess that's why.
You know, I'm not a gypsy because you're a locale gypsy. I mean, you change locations. I don't change locations as much, but I do change my goals and my desires for things. Like when I was painting, I taught myself to paint, you know that, and I painted for about 6 years, and I realized that I couldn't go beyond what I was doing unless I really began studying and really tried to pursue, using your word, of mastering it. I was quite good at it. You know, a lot of my paintings were junk, or a handful that are pretty decent, but I lost desire, and it just, you know, I had no desire to become, you know, to become a master at it, which would have then consumed all of my time. All of my time would have been painting and drawing. And I don't have time to spend all of my time on one thing. I've got too many things that I'm working on, or too many things that I'm looking at.
Well, I understand because I do think that a certain mastery requires a level of focus that's all-consuming. And unless you're really, really passionate about it, it's hard to find that kind of time or to decide to spend all of your time on that thing.
Yeah, both of those, to find the time and then the desire to spend all of your time on that one thing. And you know, is that what they call the jack of all trades kind of person?
Back to Charlie.
Hey, this is Charlie Hedges on The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm talking with, we're having our quarantine conversations, and my first one is with my dear, dear friend, Taryn Voget, who is a Renaissance woman in colloquial, that's a gypsy, but she's done so many different things, and one of the things Taryn has done, as you listen to the first half of the podcast, you could see the extent of her corporate activities. But she has an idea of genius that we talked about maybe over a year ago, and I think that's worthy of rehearsing. Talk to me about your concept of genius, Taryn.
Well, my concept of genius, it's really evolved over time, but the way I've really come to understand genius is it's when a number of different things come together, but I just taught a class on genius. And the way I said, the name of the class was Genius is a Verb. People think genius is a noun, like, oh, she's a genius, or oh, he's a genius, or oh, that's genius. But really, I think the better way to think about genius is that, oh, he's geniusing, or oh, she's geniusing. It really is a verb. And the reason I say that is because genius is about, ultimately, it's about focus. It's about focusing on something to the extent that you're great at it, or genius at it. And then those moments, or those epiphanies, or those ahas, or the brilliant ideas, you know, those come as part of the process of geniusing. But I love Michelangelo, you know, the famous sculptor and painter. He has the best quote. I use it all the time. And he said, "If people knew how much work this was, they wouldn't call it genius." And he said that he was painting the Sistine Chapel, right? I was like, oh, my God, that's so true. If people knew how much work it was, you wouldn't call it genius. And I think that's such the true thought about genius. I mean, you look at anybody, whether, you know, the great geniuses of our times, like Elon Musk. So, I mean, these are people that are so focused on the thing.
So there's two connotations then of genius.
Hmm.
Would you say? How would an Elon Musk fit in this definition?
Well, so if I go back to genius as a verb, right, and you got to think, well, then what are you doing when you're geniusing? And what you're doing when you're geniusing is a couple of things. Is you're operating from some level of passion. You're excited about the thing. You know, in Elon's case, he's excited about electric cars and rocket ships and engineering. And you know, in other people's cases, they're passionate about painting or dancing or accounting or whatever the thing is, right? There's some level of passion. And then the second part of it when you're geniusing is there's all these components of what I would call strategy, right? Like you're good at strategy, and strategy has sort of subcomponents under it. You're thinking about it in a way that maybe someone else isn't, that is unique to you. My sister, for example, is quite a genius baker, and she's got a bake shop. And the way she thinks about it is she's operating from goals around baking that are just so interesting, you know, like she wants her croissants to be artisan looking. She doesn't want them to look all uniform. She wants them to look homemade, but like they just came out of a French oven, you know? And so she's just operating from sort of her own set of goals for what she wants something to be that are different than most other people's. And so then there's a whole sort of bunch of other things around, like I've noticed patterns of genius and sort of other pieces of strategy, which we've got into in another show. People can go back and listen to that. But then I think the third part of it is that when you're operating from passion and you're doing all the things that sort of are the patterns of genius that come intuitively, then the third part is you have those moments where you're really channeling something higher than yourself. You're sort of opening yourself up to something bigger, an idea to come through, an aha moment. Or like when you're painting, you're really letting something move through you. And that really is another component of genius. And so the way I have come to really understand genius is that, you know how you those prisms, like, you know, when you see a prism, like a glass prism?
Yes,
and
yes.
When the sunlight shines through it, it can often be enough power to create a fire because it's focusing a ton of energy from the sun into a laser-like focus.
Right.
That's really quite strong. And I think that's such a great visual for what I think that the act of geniusing is that we're the prism. We're taking the infinite creative potential of the universe and we're focusing it like a laser light through us. Like we are the prism and our excitement is what creates the laser, right? And that's how I've come to think about genius. And so like you look at Elon Musk as such a great example of genius. You know, he was considered crazy for the early part of his career with electric cars. He's almost failed a number of times. No one thought he was a genius with electric cars up until the stock price hit, you know, $850 a share recently. And then all of a sudden now he's a genius. And what I would say is he only a genius when cars are selling, or was he
right.
A genius when he came up with the idea and nobody believed him? But the problem is as a society, we're actually really terrible at recognizing genius in the early stages. he's been genius.
Yeah, look at the writers.
Yeah.
Look at the genius writers that never became famous until they died.
Yeah, and at what point were they a genius? Long before we recognized it, but they were geniusing all along.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know what it sounds like, Taryn? It sounds like it's something about an intentional and conscious to access yourself and your own beliefs rather than believing in the beliefs of society and the beliefs of culture. And truly, the boundaries, and dare I use the word now, the quarantine, we quarantine our brain into thinking that croissants need to look a certain way or the biscuits need to learn to look a certain way rather than creatively. And interestingly, which she had to break a boundary, she had to break a barrier in order to do that. And that gives an opportunity to make genius a verb is when, you know, a man named Alan Jones once said, we all have secondhand beliefs because we believe what's been told us to believe rather than search ourselves and investigate ourselves and search literature and find out what we really do believe ourselves, that it is our system. It doesn't have to be in line with anybody else's system. Would you think that has to do with genius?
Well, I think that those are there are people that have really pushed us to the next level in terms of inventions, or in terms of art or something, right? I mean, you look at who invented the first airplanes or the first microchips or, you know, some famous artists that have really pushed the edge. So I think sometimes genius is about really pushing the edge to something new. I love the idea of the everyday genius, the people that are the most fantastic servers at a restaurant you've ever experience. They've just got sort of a genius way about serving you, or you know, a local chef that is just a genius at what they do in their craft. And so I think that there are geniuses that push us to a whole new height, but there's also those that are just so exceptional at the day to day, and they're really the everyday genius.
Oh, I like the term everyday genius. So there really is, in a sense, there's the traditional sense of genius, but you're talking about genius in an everyday way that all of us have access to.
And all of us do in some way. You know, when we're operating from a place of passion and excitement and joy, and we're focused and we care about something, like, that is the energy of genius. It just may take us a while to reach a level of mastery, but you're geniusing all along. If that makes
so,
any sense.
So
right?
is this what you were doing now? Is it you were geniusing? And you're trying to hide your gypsy self under the guise of a genius?
Well, I think for me, I mean, I'm kind of like you. I'm curious about a lot of things, especially a lot of things in business. Like, different things capture my attention. You know, am I a genius at HR? Absolutely not. Am I a genius at PR? Absolutely not. But, like, I've reached a level of skill that now I understand business at a more genius level at a holistic sense, because I know one more bit and part of it a bit deeper, right?
But
also, yes. Yeah, if you think about it like that. But also, it helps me understand people better. It's like, oh, you know, I'm now working with different kinds of people doing different kinds of things, and this is what they're experiencing, and so now I can relate to different people better, and I'm a little more genius at that now.
Well, you've always been so incredible at relating with people. That's truly one of your strengths.
Well, thank you.
Oh, absolutely. It's getting near time to wrap us up here. But before we do, you always, you know, I always called you my spiritual guide, because you took me into different ways of spirituality other than Christianity or the Tao Te Ching had taken me, and you just had me thinking differently. That I appreciate your thought. You're the one that introduced me to the divine feminine, and I am still strongly, I mean, that's, gosh, Taryn, that's still extremely strong in my life. You don't know that a week in January, and most of my listeners know this, so I won't, you know, go into it too long, but I did a 10-day retreat, and of the 10 days, 6 days were sequestered solitude before we had quarantine. But I was in Hilo, Hawaii, and I was confined to a cabin and an 8-square-foot area out in front of me, and I was not allowed to leave except to pee and get a glass of water, and they would bring meals to me, and you could have no books, no computers, no phones. You could have a written journal. And that was really a time, I'm telling you, I had visions, Taryn. I mean, I had one that was a genuine vision, you know, that just was getting into the deeper part of myself. And the divine feminine really played a strong role in that, and that was much to your credit of bringing her. She had visited me, and you just named it for me. That really helped me. So, what is your spiritual path like right now?
God, that's a really. By the way, thank you for sharing that. I didn't know you went to Hawaii, and that's amazing. You know, what's interesting about the divine feminine is we all carry both the divine masculine and the divine feminine within us. You know, some are
right.
Expressed or stronger at different moments or times or in our gender. What's interesting about the divine feminine is that the divine feminine is about being, not doing. So a 10-day retreat is a very divine feminine retreat where you're just being, you're not doing. So it would make a lot of sense that energy would be very present within you as you're just sitting there being. Now, if you look at what's going on right now in the world, we're all just having to sit and be and not do, you know? So the divine feminine is very present on this planet, as we're all sitting around, you know, with not so much to do and yet just be. And it's uncomfortable for people because we don't have that energy as such a familiar one in our daily lives. And so this is the divine feminine reminding us what it feels like to be. And a lot of us don't know how to do that. So I find it somewhat interesting. I also think the divine feminine is very present in cleaning up this planet. I'm looking around LA and there's no smog. It's beautiful out. You know, like I saw pictures of Delhi, India today, and it's absolutely crystal clear air because no one's driving in Delhi, India. So, you know, the divine feminine has a plan. And here we are living inside her plan. But to answer your question, what is my spiritual practice? You know, it's that's a great question. I haven't really thought about that. I think I've been so busy doing, I haven't really thought a lot about my spiritual practice.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah.
So much for my spiritual director.
Masculine energy. But, you know, what I think is that it's gotten to a point in my life where a lot of these things have gotten quite integrated so that the spiritual aspect in my life and my business aspects are in some ways all kind of one. And it plays out in such interesting ways, like designing a new office. I mean, I design it with all of my spiritual principles at play, what it should look like, what it should feel like, what the energy of it should be, you know, how I want people to interact with each other. I mean, these are all spiritual aspects. So I think if I were to answer your question, I'd say it's quite integrated, but I wouldn't mind getting back to some more being and a little less doing. So I'm not bummed about home quarantine. I'm really not. I'm bummed about my gym being closed. I'm not bummed about being at home.
Yeah, you know, there are those of us that are fortunate that way. I'm not bummed about being home because I have I'm studying the contemplatives and the mystics now and reading Rilke. God, I love Rilke, the Book of Hours. Have you ever read the Book of Hours?
No.
Oh, geez.
Send me that link.
I've read it probably four or five times and I've taken so many notes in the book. It's just a brilliant book of poetry, one of his early books of poetry. It is so insightful, and consider that it was written by a man starting at 23 and he finished it at 25.
That's amazing. Send me the link. You know, I just thought of an answer to your question that I think is actually the truth. You know what? Are you still there?
Just Taryn. It is. Yeah, I'm here. I just was thinking that, it is time for us. My producer is giving me the cutthroat that we have had our chat. And what did you think of an online radio chat for the first time we chatted?
Well, it's the first time I've done an online radio chat, and I seriously can't believe we haven't caught up in so long. So I feel like we could go on for another four more hours. So I don't think your listeners want to hear
exactly
that.
Yeah, that's exactly what
I'm still
thinking.
Interested.
I think I need to call you afterward so we can really talk.
Exactly. Thank you so much for having me on, though.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Taryn. You're great.
Thank you.
You're always great. I love having you on the show.
The feeling's mutual. I love being on the show. And thank you so much, Charlie. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. And I want to thank all our listeners for tuning into The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out on our website, thenextchapter.life. Until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.